like as I did before, taking occasions of who wants to speak. I just wonder if it's a little bit of my own. I was reading something yesterday on industrial conflict in the early 70s, and people said about the agreements that were made between the TUC and the Labour Party in the late 1970s.
Social contract.
But it says in something I was reading that between July and November 1972, representatives of the TUC were taking part in tripartite talks on economic strategy and incomes policy with the Heath government. Not several months after the miners had won their strike. So to think that it was that the TUC were just willing to cut deals with the Labour Party is incorrect. I think that's something for us to think about now in relation to the way the TUC is willing to talk to and probably willing to cut deals with the coalition government now. They're not just looking, waiting for another Labour government. They're willing to do, I think, deals with whoever will talk to them. I think that's one thing that the early 70s seems to show that I didn't realise yesterday, that they were engaged in talks at that time. But so who wants to come on, you're not my students in a seminar, it's like getting you to I've got Mike again, I've got Helen again. Anyone else? Any more? Okay, well, look, you go, Tom. Okay, well, if you want to contribute, just catch my eye and I'll nod to you and I'll write you down. Okay, Mike?
Let's come back on some of the issues from, obviously, the 1970s. I won't go back to 1911, otherwise we're going to get... I mean, that was an important era, but I think we can get tied down there. What's really, in a sense, is coming out here, there's this, all this focus on trade unions all the time. We've seen trade union decline. It reached a peak in 79, I think, well, in fact, 13.1, and then decline. And I think we've got to remember here, in a sense, that the trade unions are actually a product of capitalism. And you can't expect trade unions to overthrow capitalism, because, you know, that's not the nature of the beast. So a lot of things we've been saying, in some sense, for those trade union leaders in particular, obviously, is no surprise. And some of those trade union leaders would have come up through the rank and file, as I'm sure people know. And what I'm really concerned about is it's slightly exaggeration of, and I think Tom mentioned this earlier, of what was going on in the 70s. Certainly the militancy, and we've given lots of examples of that, and I've given one or two examples as well. But on the other hand, how much of that class consciousness is coming out? And the best you can actually say is a trade union sort of consciousness. In other words, fighting for fairness. And I mentioned about some of the things about economists, but it wasn't only that. There was solidarity. So it was more than that, I think. It was that trade union consciousness. But how much that came over is a real threat to the system. My own view that it actually wasn't. It was for a minority of activists, yes, but I don't think it was for the masses. And then you've got to start asking the question, and I think people would say, how do you change that? And that can change overnight. It's a bit like Tom said, very much surprised. You go by appearances and people aren't very conscious, and suddenly you get an event or something really triggers that someone, a bit like what's happened in very recently with the students' movement. I mean, that's shaken the government, there's no doubt about that. And that, to a lot of people, would come as quite a surprise. And it's come almost from nothing to almost a revolt anyway. It's not revolutionary, but it's certainly a revolt. And that's what I think is the difficulty I think all of us have to explaining things. Thinking, well, there's not the consciousness going about, but that consciousness can change quite rapidly. And also when we look at it, even with numbers with trade unions, I think I want to talk about the Russian Revolution, if you like, but the trade union movement was very small in Russia, but that small number of advanced workers did have some sort of impact in political terms. All right, some were Mensheviks, some were Bolsheviks, and so forth. But nevertheless, it's small parts, the advanced parts of society that can actually change things, what I'm saying, through some sort of leadership. And then that masses not necessarily would follow, but sometimes they would take the lead, and then the leaders would actually have to follow and catch up. I know that sounds a bit confusing, but I think the whole thing is, with this change in consciousness in society, it can take us all by ways. You can't actually predict. It's like a volcano. You don't know when it's going to come. When it does, it can catch us all unawares.
Okay, Alan?
There's a couple of things. What kind of bit disturbs me is a lot of the anti-cats movement so far, I'm not saying, you know, in Italy, and it might change, is repeating a lot of the mistakes of the 70s with, you know, having defensive, defend public sector, which is important, but they're not really going beyond that. So it allows the right to stereotype them as just special pleading the public sector, which isn't the case. I think, maybe a living wage campaign added to a kind of defend the cuts gives you a positive agenda and allows you to include Tesco shop workers, but other people that think, well, we don't get a pension, why should we care? So their interests are being kind of addressed as well. The other thing that allows unions to be kind of separated from their own is the deduction of wages at source, which allows unions to identify more with the employer than the employees. And I think the other thing left about is challenge the deserving, undeserving poor thing, which allows convenient state scapegoat and allows them to get away with the law if they're not shot now.
Okay, thanks for that. Alan?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to think how to link things up. I was really impressed by your thoughts about the way in which seafarers and other groups like that actually have the ability to bring in things which are unusual, which are international. And what I was going to say is I can't see where things are going to go now. But I do know that we're right in thinking they'll come from unexpected places. I know in my lifetime, in terms of my political development, I can think of, for example, I'm Australian, I grew up in Australia. Because I grew up in Australia, I had a better chance at tertiary education than if I'd grown up in Britain. And the thing that was really important as a catalyst in Australia, in racist Australia, was the Sharpeville massacres, which brought students in particular and young people into solidarity with people, black people in South Africa. Another really important thing, I think, was the civil rights movement in the United States, which actually brought, again, it was about solidarity with black people. It also created a new women's movement. And the third thing, I think, the 1969 events in Paris. And they were all things that were happening among young people and which challenged a lot of the established structures of the left and the trade union movement. And so I think what it seems to me is important is not to be frightened of those sorts of developments, but also to try to not allow generation gaps to get in the way of people learning from one another across the generations as well. Where it will go and how it will happen is anybody's guess.
Okay, Tom?
Oh, it's all right, I've changed my mind.
Okay, I'll take another lot of caravan. Ben, is there anyone else who wants to come in so I don't miss them?
Okay. I'd say that really struck a chord with me, because a lot of the times there's that disconnect between generations, which is one thing like this is really good. But wait, more ways we can find to avoid reinventing the wheel, the better, really.
Sorry, Ben, go on.
I was just trying to really.
Okay, Dave, please come in then.
Yeah, I take issue, obviously, with the other with what you think. I don't believe that this reified organisation, which is a special kind of organisation through which people develop consciousness. So I don't think there's a need for a special party or a special executive or, you know, a vanguard this or a vanguard that. I think people can develop consciousness wherever they are. If you decide in the tap room in the boozer to launch a revolution, then that's your organisation. If you decide to do it through a rank and file organisation of a union, then that will be your organisation. And I think that what matters is class consciousness and not the organisation you take that class consciousness into. So I'm arguing, obviously, as a syndicalist to say that. And I think unions, especially at base level, are absolute perfect platforms for changing society if you take them outside of the frames for which they're developed. I mean, if, you know, we could argue a lot about when unions first developed, and I mean, they didn't develop as craft unions. As you know, most unions were rank and file workers, manual unions that people developed and then put down the way that people do with shops with tenant committees. You know, the rent rise, you form a tenant committee, you defeat the rent rise or whatever, and then you put it down. 20 years along the line, you set up the tenant committee again. People did that with unions all the time. And I think it's what matters is that we maintain the political consciousness of the nature of class struggle and class and develop class consciousness, and really the organisation tends to take place for take care of itself, I think.
Okay, well, Steve?
Cheers. I also believe that, you know, it's got to be something spontaneous. It's got to come from the grassroots. And unfortunately, at the moment, I'm not sure whether the organised trade unions, or what you want to call them, are fit for purpose at the moment. And one of the real problems I have, I'm an elected rep, is I'm always having my shirt tails pulled, shall I say, back by regional officers. A very good example at the moment is we're being told against, contrary to national conference decisions and local conference decisions, which is a democratic structure, which should be sovereign to the trade union, this is unison, that we cannot affiliate to local anti-cuts alliances. We're not allowed to spend our money in this way. And it's absolutely bloody ridiculous. Now, we want to challenge that, but the recent executive, which we were going to go ahead and do it anyway, had six people turn up to it out of a membership of 6,000. You know, we need a quorum of 16. Now, that speaks volumes. Now, I don't think that's apathy. I just think a lot of people, especially young people, just do not see trade unions as an appropriate vehicle to take that struggle forward and at this given moment. I think there's other problems as well, and that's a diversity of the working class, of our class, if you like, you know. And let's be fair, a lot of them don't work. A lot of them are part-time, very low-paid, care workers, looking after family members, etc., etc. And all these people are going to be the ones facing these cuts. And I hear what you say, Alan, about it being, well, as an anarchist, being in a strange position of fighting for the welfare state. But at the end of the day, it's all we've even got at the moment, and our forefathers fought for it as well. And it's going to have such a negative effect on the communities. And that's where, perhaps, we're going to see an uprising. I mean, I was talking to someone the other night about Ian Bone, apparently has got this new pensioners movement together. I mean, I'm just mentioning that. You know, I'm not saying that it's going to be that. why the fuck not? The pensioners...
So it's called.
pensioners and the youth have a lot of things in interest. A lot of things in interest. And it's just getting that engagement. And to be perfectly honest, comrades, and I'm not having a dig at anybody in this room whatsoever, like, you know, one of the good things that has come out of the Anti-Cuts Alliance at the moment is breaking down sectarianism. You know, we've all been on fucking picket lines with the socialist worker, socialist alliance, the anarchists, all in different little corners, chatting to people who are trying to picket and don't understand the rhetorics. To be perfectly honest, what you were saying a minute ago about how different what the working class actually needs and what the left feel they need and what the working class interest actually is, which actually at times does require them to go to Tesco and buy shit food because that's all they can afford, even though they know it's wrong. You know, I could go on.
Okay. Yeah, I've got four people who indicated they will speak. I'm just going to jump in and just say something very quick myself. In
put myself at the list where nobody else had indicated.
I just think just taking up this idea of class consciousness very briefly in terms of, you know, you get the sense in the 70s, there's a strong sense of us and them. You know, we knew who they were, we knew who us were. But now I get a strong sense of, we know who them is, you know, the bankers, etc. But we don't know who the fuck we are. You know, and that's the... I mean, how can we develop new ways of thinking about that? You know, we are a working class, but how do we articulate in such a way? Because people think it's people like Dave, you know, in terms of miners and so on and so forth. How do we develop new ways of thinking about who us is?
Well,
I don't
know who the middle class is, does
he?
Got Matt.
Yeah, related to what Andy's just said, I'm slightly to take issue with Dave Douglas's point about the current state of the working class, really, because I think that although I totally agree with what you're saying, that manufacturing is now about 10%, the whole shift has changed, you know, and if you look at it purely in terms of producing value, that means a slightly different situation in terms of the power of the workers and how they feel they are with that withdrawal of labour method. I still think, you know, the existing working class, i.e. the vast majority of people in Britain, who I still do think are part of the working class, you just have to look at the breakdowns of income levels to work that out, actually, that those people do still have an incredible amount of power. You know, I mean, if you look at what's happened in France, where they've been giving us lessons since 1995 with all of their struggles, who are leading the coordinations in France? You know, the teachers, the factory workers that are left, the oil workers, the service workers, the lorry drivers, the health workers. You know, that's the different groups. Other ones, I'm sure, you know, other people who know more about it can tell you about other groups. But what I'm saying is that the composition of the 21st century French working class in terms of what sectors people work in must be very, very similar to the one in the British working class overall. And I think, you know, when the resistance does build up more, and, you know, the students have shown how it can blow up from nothing, you know, because nothing could be more vapid and wretched than the students' union leadership of the last few years. All the students are interested in is freshers, you know, and entertainment and anything but bloody politics. They've just been swept away by the brilliance of this movement that has emerged, you know. So the old 5,000 students, 6,000 students at Bristol on Wednesday, you know, all this stuff up at Millbank and everything else, you know, it's absolutely brilliant. Thank goodness we've got a coalition, because that means there's two party headquarters that we can attempt to trash instead of just one. It's absolutely fantastic. I've just answered Andy's point a little bit as well. This issue about, you know, people know who they are, them, and that's brilliant. Let's hold on to that. It's brilliant that more and more people are becoming more aware of who the them are and how sick they are. And I love the fact that reasonable people who would really rather not agree with radicals are just getting so irritated with how greedy the fucking rich are that they're having to agree with the old lefties. And that's a really positive step. Don't think, oh God, now you finally joined the party. You think, brilliant, that these people are coming around. And I think that the working class today in Britain is in a shape to rebuild all those organisations. We've still got more members in the trade unions than the French do even now. Because it's about the organisation. About the organisation, and that can happen in hospitals and in care homes and workers there, and especially in fucking Tesco's. You know, when those workers walk out, they'll do some more in a day, as much in the day as the Fleet Street workers used to do. And when they discover that power, you know, brilliant.
Okay, Roger. I'm really pleased with Steve. He's getting on a bit now, and I think it's great that he's shown solidarity with the pensioners and obviously he should immediately intervene in the pensioners movement. Bristol become a pressure. But he's right. But what this is talking about now is some stuff, you know, that became clear, I think, in the 70s, which we are going to cover in this week, you know, this set of events in a few weeks' time, which is the idea of moving out of the vanguard of the working class being industrial workers, which has clearly, you know, been kind of prevalent, I would say, in the 20th century, that the industrial working class is the vanguard. And what happened in the 70s, I mean, go on about it, but basically is the idea of who is the class. That's a good question that people need to think about. And that is one of the problems of trade unionism, in the sense that, you know, it's only talking about one section of the working class. It's not talking about unwage labourers, it's not talking about, obviously, non-unionised people, it's not talking about, you know, the school kids, the unemployed, and all these other groups. And so we are now, I think, in a position where we can start talking about working class in a bit more of a kind of solid sense in some ways. Like, that doesn't mean that we're in a good position, it just means the opportunity's there. And it's very interesting to me that the struggles in the 70s, 80s and 90s, and partly what we're talking about when you talk about France, and you talk about Italy, and you talk about these other countries, the struggles in those periods were actually about what organisation the working class is going to have. Is it going to work its way through, you know, the communist-controlled trade unions at the time? Is it going to work its way through, you know, trade unions in general, the socialist parties, whatever? In fact, there was this split at that period in the 70s away from that idea that actually, in fact, coordinations and self-activity in factories was about actually breaking with that historical past. Now, I'm not sure that we're in that situation yet, but there is an opportunity in the next few years where that might happen. And what we might be looking for, and it's going to be a fight that may involve, unfortunately, a lot of divisions in this room. And that divisions may be about, initially, against trade union leadership, against what the TUC is saying. I mean, we were talking about this the other night, about sellouts all the time. You know, why is it consistently everybody goes sellout, sellout, sellout? Something's wrong if we keep having to have this excuse of sellouts all the time. So, I don't know.
what we're looking for now is if organisations in the workclass do spring up out of self-activity, their relationship in the workplace to trade unions will become an issue, I think, in the next couple of years. And if it does, and you know, that to me makes the situation a lot more interesting, because it might move towards understanding the working class differently to the way it's been in the last 100 years.
Okay, thanks. I've got you, and then I've got Tom.
Yeah, I agree with Dave's point about class consciousness just sort of appears often, like the Shepherd's Pie Committee. I don't know if you remember that particular strike. But the point I'd like to get to mainly is, how are we going to change society? Now, the people who are going to change society are the people who have been hurt by capitalism the most. And if we went round Bristol, the people who have been hurt by capitalism the most are the people on council estates, Knoll West, Southmead, Lock Leeds. Now, how many people in this room have knocked on a council estate door in the last few things? What are we doing with our time? I'm just asking the question, what are we doing with our time? You know, how effective can we be with our time? You know, are we going to play it safe and mix with the same people in comfortable little rooms and get on the internet and just do it all comfortable? Or are we going to get out there and meet the working class, meet the underclass? And I know that's difficult for some people who don't come from that upbringing. I'm involved in a punk band, a political punk band in the Forest of Dean. We had a gig in Bristol last week at the Chelsea Inn. Some people boycotted the gig, worried there was going to be trouble and all this sort of stuff because some of the people involved, there was no trouble, you know. We had a demo yesterday, in a small demo in the Forest of Dean. It ended up carting the MP out, Mark Harper. Like, you know, it's another little story. But the point I want to get to, the main point is, we can come in here and talk about the 70s, the 60s, Emily Pankhurst, everybody under the sun who's done revolutionary activity, like, you know. But the point is, when we point the finger, there's three pointing back at ourselves. We've got to look at those three fingers and say, if we're a revolutionary, what are we actually doing that's effective? Like, you know, the time now is crucial. You know, capitalism's in crisis in Britain across the globe. Students, you know, people are pissed off with the mainstream bourgeois Labour Party and all the rest of it. And what are we actually doing? What's actually happening at Lock Leeds at the moment politically? What's happening at Knoll West? What's happening at Southwood? Or are we just going to come to the comfortable left bank of Stokes Croft, end up in one of these comfortable little rooms and go, oh, rah, 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 and rah, 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 you know? Or are we going to get out there and do what some of the people we admire and talk about? Like, you know, that's the point we should be asking ourselves. It's easy to sit here in these little rooms and go, yeah, wouldn't they brilliant run with? Wouldn't they brilliant here? Wouldn't they brilliant there? That, you know, and I remember the anti-poll tax struggle, I was involved in that. And when we started that struggle, we were going around with petitions all over the place, every council estate, every working class area, and certain left-wing groups, particularly the SWP, handed them back, saying, this ain't the issue, it's about Europe. And it ended up with the biggest riot in British history in the West End, 50 billion wiped off the stock exchange. In Russia on the Monday after the poll tax riot, they described it as a revolution. And it ended up with Thatcher being defeated. Now, that started from people doing it from the grassroots, not involved in the Labour Party with big wages and union people. So we got to ask ourselves, you know, what are we doing? Are we scared of going on those council estates? Are we scared of going into these places? Or are we going to sit in little comfortable cafes, you know, in Eastern and just idly point the finger? Well, they're not a vegan. You know, they're not organic. They don't use balsamic vinegar. Like, do you know what I mean? What are we going to do? You know, I could go on, I'll stop.
Top.
Yeah, for with some sympathy, being a council tenant, having been brought up in a Bevan council house, having lived in a council house in Redcliffe for 24 years, having been significantly involved in organising tenants, and probably the only area that's where I put in our newsletter, that we have a newsletter every month, put the anti-cuts debate in there, and our tenants group will be discussing whether we should join the anti-cuts alliance next, when we meet at the end of January again. I mean, who is the class? Who is we? You know, there's an attitude sometimes of people speaking, as though there's some romantic idea of where the class might be. But it seems to me, you know, and having a having this idea of a class consciousness that the class doesn't have, trade unions are indicative of a class consciousness. And if you're refusing to engage with workers at that level, you're imposing a consciousness that they don't have. You involve yourself with workers within, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about racism and fascist organisations, but I mean, you involve, if you want the working class to be involved in political debate. Now, in the my involvement of the left as when I come out of the Labour Party, I don't ever see the building sites, the council estates that I've lived on. I haven't seen the left where I have been.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
haven't engaged with the working
exactly.
class, whoever that working class is, and whatever level an area of work that working class is in at any given time. So it's not a map going on the council estates. I mean, to a practical discussion between reformism and how the left could have been involved in Bristol, George Micklewright, who thinks now in the Green Party, who I used to be in South, the Labour Party with him, criticised him on a number of issues, actually set up area housing committees in this city of roughly 3,000 dwellings where tenants could be democratically elected to those committees. They had a significant involvement in their arguments within the city itself. I never saw anybody on the left go and get elected to those area housing committees, you know? I didn't see anybody on the left, even so you can criticise George Micklewright for his reformism, but he laid the basis for the left to be involved, and they didn't. So, you know, if we can criticise, and I will, I would see probably as a maverick trot or whatever you can call yourself nowadays, but criticise the reformers and criticise the Labour Party. But if the class is there, you engage with the class wherever that class is, and not sort of have an opinion that you're only going to talk to work class people if they see your line of thought or line of ideas. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone else wants to come at this point? Okay. And does anybody in Dave want to come back? Steve, do you want to come back, Mike? Speakers?
Just one point, really, that, you know, the study that we're doing of 1911 and what was going on in Great Britain at that time, what's very, very interesting is that I'd forgotten that 1911 was also the time when the House of Lords had its right of veto stripped away from it. And the government at the time took the veto away from the House of Lords because of the pressure it was facing, because the Lords was going to veto a whole range of, I think it was the beginning of the welfare state, a whole range of legislation that Lloyd George had brought forward. I think we can make the comparison with that today in terms of the attacks that are being made on the welfare state. But I would also like to think as well that the areas that took part in what went on in 1911 were very un-English areas. They were basically the areas of the Celtic fringe. And I think we will see a repeat of that, but this time it will come from the numbers of migrant workers that we've got in this country, who seem to be coming more and more to the fore in terms of what their rights are and having an impact just not on trade unions, but other community and local organisations as well.
Okay, I've got some mic or something.
Yeah, can I just come back on one issue? I just want to agree with Dave on something he raised earlier, which is something we've probably not really focused on much here, as we were supposed to be talking about 1970s Britain. But Dave raised the important point about where we've lost manufacturing jobs, partly through increased productivity, mechanisation, automation, and the fact we've lost jobs abroad, but mainly in the Far East. And really what you're looking at is you're looking at globally at working class, not just Britain, because that has shifted. Manufacturing has shifted to the Far East. And it won't be in China forever. If we go to Vietnam, Cambodia, and all those places, the cheaper the labour is. And I think we need to look at it more in that context, because although we don't like the conditions we're in here, we complain about them quite rightly, we're still, compared with those, the conditions of those workers, quite advanced in that sense. And I think we need to think about that when we have these discussions. And when I go back to my own Whittywood state, and I was born in Lochlea's, just incidentally. So, but you even then, we become, even if you live on an estate like that, you're isolated in little boxes, and you forget that. and it's about the solidarity movements are coming together. You know, whether we've got, and this is what I'm concerned about, we can at least talk here and have disagreements, but so hopefully we have a united front against what's actually happening. I think that's been good for this meeting anyway, because it's come out.
Yeah, I just say in summary that the dream is what you said, that when we organise stuff, we should perhaps organise them in working class yeah. areas, yeah. even if it means yeah. organising a quiz night one night yeah. or gigs, stuff like that. And actually, if you're going for a pint, go for one along there, so you engage people in conversation. I mean, the amount of difference you can make actually by...
Yeah.
I mean, I went into a bar in Donny on Thursday, and the telly was on, and they were on about Ireland, about the Bank of the Island, you know. And we're able to engage the whole pub in a discussion yeah. about how serious the situation was. Here was a banker abolishing democracy. No longer to do with government, no longer to do with election. Here's what you're going to do. This is going to be your programme for 5 years' time. And people, you can engage people at that level rather than having to do a special event. You know, I mean, we need to go back to being part of the class and not seeing that there's something outside of it. You know?
Just very quickly, I'd just like to say that I fully agree with what Jim has just said about operating out of Easton. I mean, as an IWW member, I'm not speaking out of term, I know I've got comrades in this room, but we have agreed to set up at least five public meetings in different regions in the south and the northeast of the city,
yeah.
where it's untouched. Anybody who wants to help in those public meetings, it'll be great. And what we're trying to do is the same... loose basis of the recent Eastern for Everybody meetings regarding the muggings on the cycling path. It's like, you know, try to pull people in and get them to start operating on their own basis, you know, to start working their own stuff out. And, you know, I'm not being rude about any other political parties. We're not there to sell papers or put out posters or say, follow us, we're setting you free.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What we're trying to do is just get some like-minded people in the same room and see what kicks off. Like the blue touch paper, if you like.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
If somebody joins the IWW at the back of that, dog's bollocks. But if not, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just like to add to that. I mean, yeah, I think one big problem, and you're talking about a division between like the left in general and the anarchists and everywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, being isolated from work, because that's definitely a process we've been going for a long time. It's been something that's been dominating the anarchist movement politically since... well, for a long, long time. It certainly came during the miners' strike in 1984, where that movement basically split between those people who wanted to carry on operating in social centres and communities and isolated subcultural, you know, things, and those people who wanted to go off and, you know, leave that behind. And that pressure actually came from working-class Bristolian anarchists in the scene in Bristol, who split that scene wide open and across the whole country. Personally, I'd like to see that split happen again. Right now, as quickly as possible. But what is really important is it's no good. I have a problem with parachuting into areas, and you know what I'm talking about.
We have people parachuting to Mexico and all this.
Yeah, wait a minute, Jim. What Dave is talking about is direct connections in the class, you know, where you live, the people you know. Now, fundamental to for the anarchist scene and for the left and the anti-cuts alliance of this city is they've got to start finding out who are those people that they know in those communities already. That's the first thing you do before you dive in and start waving placards about. What is actually going on in those communities, and who do you know who lives there is sympathetic to what we're talking about? We certainly know plenty of people. Those people have been left isolated politically for a long time as well. So I would say to most people here, my strategy for doing it, and what I'm going to propose in the IWW, and what we're doing, is go out there and find those people who are already out there, because they're already out there. They've been around for 30, 40 years in the time I've been in Bristol. They're out there. They've been isolated and left alone. And they're the people that are going to be key to, you know, something like a poll tax type organisation, because they're going to be ones that are going to organise it. They're the people we've got to talk to first.
Any more? For any more?
I could, but I don't want to go on forever.
Well, discussion, it doesn't mean it's going to stop. People are going to hang around, go for a drink or whatever, or
something to eat.
So thanks for coming, everyone.